You are now listening to the Invited Podcast with Cedric Harris and Tia McClain. You've officially been invited. You are now listening to the Invited Podcast. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with Ms. Amber Anderson, a marketing professional and mother of two, originally from California. Amber holds 2 degrees from Hampton University and is an esteemed member of the Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority. And during her time in the corporate world, Amber led big name marketing initiatives for several Fortune 500 companies. And in the last few years, she has devoted her time to her family and serving as the vice president and co-owner of Cornerstone Chiropractic, along with episode 3 ghost guest, Dr. Demetrius Anderson. Today, we'll learn about Amber's journey, her insight on content creation, marriage, and family, and however else the conversation goes today. Amber, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, for sure. And just to get started, can you just tell us a little bit about Authentically Amber, that blog and that brand, and just the inspiration behind starting it?
Absolutely. So, you know, for a few years, I just enjoyed, you know, very simple things like decor, entertaining, throwing parties. And I also, at the same time, you know, was a very new mom, a young mom. And so I was constantly researching, trying to, you know, find out different activities for my son. And I just needed helpful, you know, tips. And so I was thankful to have some moms that came alongside me and helped me. But what I noticed, particularly in social media, was that there were not many moms providing a lot of, you know, insight and tips, as well as just in that decor entertaining space that looked like me. And because I was constantly giving other people advice and people reaching out for me for advice, I had decided to start Authentically Amber. So it started out initially, you know, just as a blog. And then now it has grown, you know, just overall on multiple social media platforms. And, you know, really the purpose and the goal is really just to help and to inspire, inspire moms. My saying is, life's not perfect, but you can have perfect moments. And I truly believe that, whether it is just making something beautiful or creating something beautiful, or just having one of those moments with your kids or your spouse, those are the things that really matter. So that is really why I started this. One is to inspire, and the other is just because I felt like I was saying the same thing over and over again. I would, you know, I'd have some advice or something, but, you know, I keep sharing it. So I was like, well, maybe there's a, you know, a broader audience. Maybe there's more moms that I could reach, you know, with this information, and it would be helpful and be a blessing to them as well.
I love that so much. And something that we've kind of learned and talked about a lot is how important it is to have someone that looks like you. And so I'm so glad that you mentioned that, Amber. And so I want to take us back a little bit. So kind of talk to us more about how it all started. So when you were a kid, did you envision yourself doing what you're doing now or what your career has looked like?
Absolutely not. Like, yeah. It's really crazy. Just the journey and the road. I grew up, well, I don't know, maybe a little bit now, like I wanted to be an actress. Like for years, I wanted to be an actress. And then when I got older, I really wanted to help people because I saw people in need. And so I decided that I wanted to go into nonprofit, but from a corporate standpoint. So I majored in business at Hampton. And on my first internship, I interned at a company. It's kind of split up now, but it's called ACCO Brands, and they owned office supplies, Wilson Jumps, the name. So like folders, Trapper Keeper, things like that. And that was my first taste of marketing. And I absolutely fell in love with marketing when I was on that internship. The internship I'd had the year before was with what I thought I wanted to do, which was to be in corporate nonprofit. And I just, you know, I didn't feel passion when I was in that position. And so it was ironic because it's kind of one of those things to me where, you know, God knows what it is that you need and what it is that you want in your heart and what's for you. You know, sometimes even when you don't. So I had signed up, I went through UNCF and I had signed up for a finance internship. I was like, I want to do tax, finance, and all this stuff. I was young and it sounded fancy. And and they placed me in marketing. And I absolutely fell in love with marketing. I loved, loved being the voice of the customer and the consumer. I loved just learning about insights and behaviors and how that impacted how people bought, you know, what they thought and, you know, how they felt. And so I became really passionate about marketing. And really from there, I changed courses. So after that, I had, you know, after finishing school, my graduate degree at Hampton, I had the opportunity to go work for Walmart at their corporate headquarters in Bentonville. And so I did marketing there for about 3.5 years. And I loved what I did. I did marketing for toys and entertainment. It was an absolute dream job for a young marketing professional. I had this huge budget and it was, I mean, just, it was so much fun. I loved my job. But it was one of those things, and I say this because I think this is important, especially for Black women. So the saying was, single women go to Bentonville to stay single.
Oh.
Now, why that is not, now why that's not always true and not necessarily true, you know, the fact was, is that, you know, my dating life severely suffered while I was out there. And in speaking to my mentors at the time who were, you know, executives in the organization, you know, their suggestion for me, they said, well, what is it that you, what is it that you really want, right?
Yeah.
With your career and your course, because I was moving up very fast. You know, I was on a, on an executive track, and I explained that, you know, ultimately I wanted to have family. I wanted to get married. I wanted to have family.
Yeah.
And so they said, okay, well, if that's the case, perhaps, you know, you need to be looking at opportunities, you know, in other places or places that might just have better dating pool. So I started interviewing, you know, and one of the places I wanted to move was Dallas, which is where I am now. And the other, I applied for some positions in Chicago. And so I did get a position in Chicago at Sears Corporation doing marketing strategy. And I moved and, you know, had a blast. I met my husband, Demetrius, in Chicago, and, you know, also had the opportunity to do some CPG work for Kraft Foods. So, you know, it was a great move for me and it was a great opportunity. But just, you know, to encourage what I want to say, and just to encourage women, especially, you know, Black women, is, you know, don't be afraid to take chances on the things that it is that you really want and the desires of your heart. Yes. Because a lot of times, you know, we are trained to think, okay, well, I need to focus on my career or career first. But if the desire of your heart is that you really do want to, you know, have a family, or just, you know, have a marriage, and you feel like the position that you're in or the space that you're in isn't going to get you to some of those dreams and goals, you know, see what it is that you can do to place yourself in the position to do that. So, that's kind of how I ended up in Chicago, continuing to do marketing. And I met, you know, my husband, Demetrius, and we, you know, sort of stepped out on faith very soon after we got married and moved to Dallas. And, you know, he had the dream of opening a chiropractic clinic. And, you know, for me, coming from a marketing background and managing these million-dollar budgets all the time, and then, you know, from a CPG perspective where I had to manage like an entire, you know, profit and loss portfolio, I was like, okay, that's easy. Let's do it. So he was like, it's not that easy. I was like, oh yeah, it is. And so I was like, let's, you know, let's just do it. Let's step out of faith. And so that's what we did. And, you know, we worked together, and, you know, Cornerstone was born from there.
Nice. That's awesome. And I love the background, all the stories that you told, and there's a lot to kind of pull out of that. So I have a few questions kind of piggybacking on what you just said. But how important is mentorship? I know we've talked about it before, but how important is mentorship in your trajectory? And for those who are looking for a mentor, what advice do you have for them on how to seek out a mentor and why that's important?
Absolutely. Mentorship was pivotal for me throughout my career. Yeah. And one of the things that I did consistently was I made sure that whatever organization I went into, I always made sure that I had three mentors, because mentors not only help you and provide you with advice, but they are also the ones that often have a seat at the table and can be your advocate. And that's what was really important for me to be successful and to, you know, move forward and advance within my career. And so wherever I went, I always had three mentors. I always had one African-American mentor. That person usually kept it real, told me, you know, the ins and outs of the organization. And then I always had a woman mentor, someone that I could, you know, connect with. And that person, you know, definitely always provided me with honest feedback. And then lastly, I always had a male, usually an executive leader male or white male, because, you know, those are the people that have a seat at the table. And, you know, they would help me to grow and develop, but also provide me the feedback that I needed within, you know, sticky situations at times. So that was really important. And I think you asked me about how to go about getting a mentor. For me, what I did was, like I said, when I went into a company, you know, I always assessed kind of like who those key players were, and I reached out to them. Okay. Mentorship isn't the type of thing where you expect the mentor to own that relationship. You as the mentee really own that. So I would reach out to them. I would ask them if I could have lunch with them. And I would ask them at that first lunch, oh, do you mind being my mentor? Would you be my mentor? No one ever told me no. You know, nobody's going to tell you. So, you know, those are the types of things that I did. Also, you know, thinking about people that are key players in the organization, but not somebody that is mentoring like, you know, 20 people. Like if they're a well-known mentor on the block, they may not have as much time for you as somebody that is, you know, also a key player, but doesn't have, you know, a roster of 20 plus mentors. So those are the people that I tend to connect with. And that, you know, that definitely helped me, you know, throughout my career, just grow and develop.
I think that really just helped me, because we hear about like how important it is to have a mentor, but I was never clear if people like had an official conversation to say, will you be my mentor? Or is it just like an unspoken thing? And so that is really helpful information. Like as I continue to move forward in a professional realm, not just assuming that like somebody I talk to a lot is my mentor, but like actually having that real conversation. So then they can be more like intentional on their end too. So
when they know, when they know that there is a mentor-mentee relationship, they also become a bit more open with providing you with the feedback that you need, where they may have just kind of been polite before, but they're like, well, no, based on our relationship and the fact that I am this person's mentor, I can be open and honest with them. And a part of that for us too is being able to accept that, accept feedback, right? You have to be able to accept feedback, and that's hard. Like I am a high anxiety person. I am type A. And so anytime I get negative feedback, I'm like, oh, but you know, but it does, it makes you better. And it's not even negative. It's just, you know, I mean, it's just what you can do to be better. But what I always did, this kind of even goes beyond mentorship, but I would write it down. Like, even if I did not believe the feedback, I would write it down and, you know, ask whether it was a manager or a mentor, okay, whether or not I believe this is true about myself, mm-hmm. what can I do to change this perception? Or what can I do to show that I have received this feedback and I have made a change? So that is something that that also will definitely help you grow in your career. And, you know, people see that as, oh, that person is coachable and they want to work with you.
Definitely. Oh, that's such a helpful piece of information, because I feel like I have a good or a high level of self-awareness. And so sometimes it can be hard to take in what someone's telling you about how you are. But like you just said, maybe I need to do something different to change the perception of how people, you know, are seeing me. So very, very helpful.
Yeah. Sure.
And you mentioned like so many different companies you worked for and just kind of some of the different roles you held. What were some of your favorite projects that you worked on in your marketing career? You always hear marketing and you kind of have like a broad definition, at least in my head. Mm-hmm. Can you give us any examples of things you worked on and what kind of things you're responsible for?
Yes. So I would say my favorite was when I managed the toy category at Walmart.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And it's funny because I didn't have kids at the time. So I was like really passionate about knowing who moms were with kids that played with toys. And now I'm like, I have lost all of this, or I have become who my, you know, my target segment was, which is really funny. But I managed what we would just call holiday. So, you know, with toys, with the toy category, Q4, I mean, is key. I mean, you do, you know, 70-80% of your business in that fourth quarter. And so there was a lot of excitement and a lot of sleepless nights, because I had, you know, marketing ads that I was working on both TV, radio, print, digital. So full 360 marketing campaigns, where, you know, where we were really trying to talk to moms about, you know, where to go to shop for, you know, for holiday toys for their kids. And so it was so much fun. I got to travel to the major toy manufacturers, both Hasbro and Mattel. And so I would always get to see all of the new toys that were coming out and play with them, you know, before the general public. We would go to those meetings, and I loved just learning about, you know, all those different things and then seeing it come to life in the store.
And so with that being said, like all the different experiences you have, how did that help with your own content creation now with Authentically Amber? What kind of like your background, how does that help with your content creation and how hard is it to create content in the space that you're currently in?
Oh, so, so yes. So I think that, you know, being a marketer really has, you know, set me up with an advantage and success in terms of, you know, transitioning into Authentically Amber. It also can be my Achilles heel at times, because I look at things from a marketing lens. And so I have had to change and to receive feedback and learn that things are, you know, different, you know, sometimes like in the social media space, because I will overthink something. I was putting together calendars, you know, for social media and say it was on a wreath, and, you know, I would create like, you know, I could do three, you know, multiple posts on this wreath. We can start here and then move there. And, you know, it really isn't how people consume media right now. And so that was something that I had to learn and understand. When I started Authentically Amber, I had all this content that I already created and put on the blog. And I enjoy doing the content. I've always enjoyed writing. You know, I was very particular about how my site was set up, because again, just from a marketing perspective, my logo, everything like that. And so while that was, you know, set up and it was beautiful, I launched it, and then it's like, okay, but nobody's seeing it. So then I had to learn and understand, like, you know, just the world of, you know, of social media in terms of, you know, in terms of reciprocation, because it's very different when you're on the, marketing and advertising side, right? Because everything is paid media. So you're paying and people are seeing your content. Well, when you're trying to get people to see your content organically, it is very different. And so one of the things that I had to learn, and I'll just say, like, when I came out with Authentically Amber, that was one of the things, like, I really wanted to be authentic and real and just show that real side, you know, of motherhood, which I do. But what I did learn very quickly was, without a following, you can't necessarily show all of the real authentic side without also showing the glowing side, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what draws people in, and that's what kind of attracts them within that space. And so once you have that audience, you then have that permission to kind of show a lot more of the imperfection. But initially, they need a reason to believe and a reason to follow you. And so those were the things that I knew that it was, you know, it's very simple things from a marketing perspective. What is your RTB, your reason to believe? But it was something that I had to learn once I got into this space, was, you know, introducing myself and marketing myself in a way that people would want to get to know me and my brand. And once they did, and once that trust was, you know, established, then I could show both sides. And so for me, those both sides are super important on social media, because, you know, all people see is perfection, and they feel like they can't measure up. And you know, and we all know that that's not real, and people put their best selves out there, which is fine. But I think it's important to show both sides of yourself. And so, you know, that's what I try to do. You know, that's what I, you know, as I continue to try to grow my following, you know, I hope that, you know, the more that I grow, I have, you know, more permission to give both sides. So then you asked, I think, about how hard is it or how challenging is it to start up? Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like when you're actually getting the followers, or like starting from the beginning, because like we're kind of going through the same thing.
Oh,
we're newer, you know, coming to the social media space. And I know we've talked about like the different algorithms and things like that. So like, how hard is it, or like what advice would you give to people who are trying to get into the space and just get started?
Okay, so the first point of advice that I will give is, you know, is grit, right? So, and I did not think, I mean, this is not for the faint at heart. Yeah. So that's what I had to learn. I had to put on my big girl pants, and I had to not be afraid. And, you know, I've always kind of been seen as a go-getter, but that's the first thing, first and foremost, is what I had to do was, again, to establish that credibility. I started reaching out to brands myself. And if it was something that I was really passionate about, if I didn't get an answer, I'd go online, I'd go on LinkedIn, and I would try to find the person in charge of whatever brand it was or company to see if they would be willing to give me a chance, because I knew I was small. I didn't have a big following. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wasn't necessarily going to be the first, second, or third pick for them to use as an influencer. But, you know, I'd reach out to them directly versus waiting for them to come. The more you grow, the more, you know, opportunities that you have that will come to you. There's one called Soapbox, and they are great. I work with them now. I'm working on a campaign now. And so they'll work with the, you know, with the brands directly. But yeah, a lot of them I just reach out to. So I'll just, you know, I would DM them ask, and I wouldn't necessarily like send it all in the DM, because you don't always get a response that way.
Right.
But I would, you know, ask like who their social media contact was. And then I'd go and I'd send them an email, you know, and just kind of tell them about me and tell them about, you know, my brand. I'd also look at the low hanging fruit, because that's really important, is, you know, where are women of color not represented? What brands are we not represented in? Because, you know, hey, I'm here, you know, I've got my catcher's mitt on. I can be, you know, that spokesperson, you know, for that brand. I can be that influencer for you and your brand. And so those are the types of things that I would do. So that has helped me And, you know, that's helped me to get some, you know, some great partnerships, but it did, it took a lot of work and initiation on my part. So grit is like the first thing I will say. And so, you know, just to share more and elaborate, as you were saying, like, yes, the algorithms are very tough to figure out. Like, and it's constantly changing, and, you know, I'm looking at insights. And so, you know, a very good friend and influencer, she came alongside me again, great mentor, came alongside me at first. She said, here's how this works. You know, pretty much it's a give to get situation when you're talking about social media, especially at first. So what that means is, you may not have a lot of like organic followers, but you may have other influencer followers. Mm-hmm. And so you guys are really partnering with each other, meaning that you're commenting on their content and then they're commenting on yours. And so that is something that I think like a lot of people at first don't get. And so I'm thankful that I did have someone to share that with me. Yeah. Is that is, you know, initially, especially how you get that engagement is you develop those relationships socially. So developing relationships socially will definitely help you, you know, and from there, I mean, of course, hashtags are always, we always want, you know, try to have winning hashtags. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Yeah. But, you know, I'd also recommend even for you guys or anyone else is reaching out to, you know, some of those larger accounts, that, you know, may feature you regardless of your following, mm-hmm. if you have great quality photos. And so that's the other thing that I had to learn, particularly about Instagram, is, you know, it's just in terms of the quality of photos, the uniqueness, those are the things that people are looking for. Yeah. Now, of course, video is so important. And the way people consume media is very fast right mm-hmm. now. They want video, they want it fast, and they don't always want sound. So you have to figure out, it's like, it's going back to miming. Like, I'm like, these are the Charlie Chaplin days. Like we uh-huh. have to, and I mean, it's, so that is what, it's a different way of thinking. Right. So, so that's what I am learning. That is my journey right now, is if there's a story that I want to tell, how do I tell it in less than a minute? You know, with or without sound, right? So sound is complimentary. It's the icing on the cake, but I just have to assume that people are consuming the media even without the sound on. So how can I get that story across in a silent manner in 30 to 60 seconds? So
exactly. Because when you think about it, like when you're watching your stories, you may not be in a space where you can have the sound on. So it's important that you're marketing something that someone can look at without sound. Mm-hmm. And so also what you were saying, Amber, I think perfectly describes TikTok. So we're connected with you on Instagram. Are you in the TikTok space?
I'm not, but I am going to get into the TikTok space. I was waiting a little bit because I was like, let me see how this goes.
Let me dip my toe.
Yeah. But also it was like, you know, I started with Instagram and Facebook and I was like, okay, it was so overwhelming. I was like, let me focus on growth within, you know, one social space, on one platform. And then once I've learned how to do that, then, you know, I can expand to some others. And so I am ready for TikTok now. Mm-hmm. I feel that I am. So I'm actually supposed to be launching within the next week or so. Yay. And, you know, and so just kind of building content, I had to learn how to like edit videos and do that because again, like I'm an old school marketer. And so when I started Authentically Amber, like I hired somebody that was on maternity to help me do a lot of the editing. So it's like, I don't have time to do all that. I also have a YouTube channel. So she would do the videos. I still have somebody that does the YouTube videos for me. He does the editing. Cause I'm like, I don't have time for that. But the app editing now for these short videos, I can do. So I can learn how to do that.
Awesome. We'll definitely be looking out for your TikTok drop.
Yes.
And so we talked a lot about like kind of the logistics about how to get it started and mm-hmm. like how to build a following. But let's talk about a little bit about the content. Yes. So a lot of the stuff you post is kind of vulnerable, like you said, open, and honest. Mm-hmm. How hard is it for you to be vulnerable or open to a very large audience, some of which you may not even know? Is that a challenge for you at all?
I would say at first it felt that way. When I started writing content, it was even before the blog went live. And so I'd start writing this content, and I really just had to pray over it, because, you know, I wanted it to be able to help someone. Yeah. And, you know, at times, depending on what I was, you know, writing about, is it something that is going to point or influence someone to Christ? So I have a whole section on lessons learned in a recent post. I have not posted yet because I was trying to, you know, see if I get some partnership there, but I'll be posting that soon, and I'm excited about it. But yeah, it is hard at first to be vulnerable. And so that's why I think that it's good to just, you know, white paper it, where you don't even have your blog up. If you're just getting started, you just start writing, you know, just write, mm-hmm. you know, okay, what is it that I want to write about in this space? What is this topic? For me, sometimes it was, you know, redoing an office. And other times it was about having, you know, a really, really, you know, bad or challenging day with my boys, you know, and how to see the light in that. And so, so I would just start writing those things. So maybe write something easy first that you feel comfortable with. And then once that writing starts to flow, then you start to feel more comfortable and more open. And so, I would say, you know, one of the pieces that I did, and it touches my heart so much because I was so nervous about writing it. And I really, but it was on my heart so deep. And so I really had to just to pray, you know, that it would be a blessing to someone, and, you know, that God's word would be shown. And it was really, you know, in the midst of, you know, just the ongoing police brutality and civil unrest, and thinking about my boys and, you know, the challenge with, you know, I mean, the fear of, you know, raising Black men, you know, in this environment. Yeah. And I didn't want it to be just another piece that, you know, we all looked at and said, yep, you know, because, right, we're talking to ourselves. Yeah. And so, you know, I really prayed about it, and I just poured out my heart. And when I shared it, there were so many moms that I had worked with and worshiped with who were not women of color that saw it and that shared it. And, you know, it was just a different insight for them. And that to me was, you know, that was worth it. And that was a high to me. That was groundbreaking, because that's what I wanted to do. And that to me is influence, you know, versus just, you know, okay, you know, here's another think piece, we're angry, you know, but, you know, how do we influence others, you know, to see our side and to, you know, have compassion and love. So, but I'm not gonna cry, but so those are, you know, so those are some of the things that I enjoyed doing. But, you know, I would say to anybody that is struggling with that vulnerability, is, you know, definitely to, you know, to just pray and think outside of yourself, right? We have to let our own pride go sometimes, mm-hmm. to know that what we're doing, can it help someone else? And if it can, then it's totally worth it. Even if you don't have a big following, that's okay. I still don't have a big following, but the thing is that if it helps, you know, one person, you know, then it's worth it. I had a lady, I wrote a post about a trip we took to Cancun this summer, and, you know, with all the COVID restrictions and the boys, like, I mean, I laid out everything, like, here's what you need to do, you know, all this stuff, here's COVID test. And, you know, and then I posted, I'm like, okay, I don't know if anybody saw that. And then somebody DM'd me on Instagram, like, with some questions. Actually, two people did, because they saw it and they're like, yeah, we're going next week. And they were like, yeah, on your blog, you said, you know, to DM you with questions. So I'm DMing. I'm like, this is great. Thank you. Yes. Thank you for asking questions. You know, so, you know, those types of things. So understanding, you know, whether you are, you know, whether you are influencing 1 million people, 1,000 people, 100 people, or 5 people, you have the ability and the power to influence in this world. And so, you know, so just take that opportunity to help somebody else.
Oh, I love that so much. Yes. If you can just touch one person, start from there. Mm-hmm. And so Amber, I want to talk about your sons. Mm-hmm. So of course that's a very large part of your blog and your brand. Mm-hmm. So if you could pinpoint one thing, what do you think is the biggest thing since becoming a mother that your sons have taught you about you?
Oh my gosh. I would say, you know, like my Achilles heel growing up was just that I have always been like a very impatient and short-tempered. I'll be honest, like impatient, like short-tempered person. Like I was very, very soft-spoken all the time. And I would never like, a lot of people wouldn't see that side of me, but I mean, it was real. My husband knows it's real. And once I had kids, it was like, man, you have to have patience and you cannot let that temper go, you know, all the time, because they see that and they learn from that and, you know, they'll do that too. So that was the biggest thing that I think I learned was patience and humility. Parenting is the most humble experience you will ever have. And that is, you know, what I tell people all the time. Like you know, you can be big and bad in corporate America and your job, but trust me, a little tiny person, a tiny human, will humble you to no end. You know, before you have kids, you're like, oh, I'm going to do it this way and that way. And, you know, my answer to this is going to be no or hell no. You know, you know. All these things you're going to do. And then, and it's a lot. It is. I mean, it is a lot. And you know, you learn and, you know, things that I said I would never do. I'm like, oh, I am humbled. I'm completely humbled. And so it has taught me not to judge, especially like, I feel like before you become a parent, you know, you'll judge other people. Like, you know, my kid would never be, you know, screaming in Target, you know. And then like, now you just like, look at them with compassion, you know, you're like, first off, you're like, thank God it's not mine. And then secondly, you're like, oh, poor you, I'm sorry, you know, because, you know, because you just never know. And so, I would just say humility and patience.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
And so like your family, like Tia mentioned, is like a huge part of your life, but also prior to that was like, you know, your corporate trajectory, your corporate career. Yes. How hard was the decision to like transition out of corporate to, you know, being supporting your husband, being the co-founder and vice president of Cornerstone and running a small business? Was that a hard decision for you at all? And so was that the deciding factor to go ahead and transition more toward the family business?
So I would say that, you know, initially my dream had always been that I wanted to stay home and have a family, you know, even though I did all this stuff in corporate America, you know, people were like, well, why do you work so hard? This is what you would do long term. I'm like, because we should work hard at anything we do. We take pride in our jobs. I love that side. And so I would say that, you know, I felt that God kind of like gently moved me in this direction, because when we left Chicago, and then I came here to work, you know, my role, I kind of like take it pretty much like a demotion, right? But I had to start thinking about the end goal. And so, you know, my husband and I, we sat down, I said, okay, what's the end goal? All right, well, we want to do these, you know, these clinics and be self-employed. And, you know, we want to have kids and, you know, we want to, you know, have me to be able, you know, to be the opportunity to stay at home. And so with that, you know, I took a position that was lower than the other positions that I held, you know, but it was like, okay, put food on the table and, you know, and help us financially. And so I did that so that, you know, we could move here. And so that was like humbling in itself, because I wasn't doing, you know, what I loved anymore. I didn't have these big budgets and, you know, I wasn't on the private jet anymore. I had the end goal in mind. Mm-hmm. Right. So I still had to do my job really well. You know, and just remember like what our end goal was, and we were working towards a goal. And so, that was really important. I will say that once I did finally stop working. Of course, it was like not what I thought it would be. And so it was funny because, you know, I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to be, you know, at the park. I'm going to be, you know, sitting at home watching Netflix while the baby sleeps. And it's like, no, it is so much, it's so much more work than when I was working. Like, it, you know, it constantly up and, you know, constant exhaustion. But I don't regret it at all.
Yeah.
I'm thankful that I have the opportunity to, you know, be with my boys and experience everything, you know, in their lives while they're young and while they're little. And even if they don't remember that, you know, I will, and just kind of pour into them when they're in these very, you know, vulnerable states and vulnerable ages. And so that to me is a blessing in itself. Both my parents worked extremely hard. You know, so they weren't able to be at everything. And they, you know, frankly, like they missed a lot because of that. And so that was one of the reasons that motivated me to want to be home with my children, was so that I could be there, you know, and not miss those moments.
And so my first mind goes to, what is it like to work with your spouse?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'm interested.
So, there was a lot of, at first we definitely had to learn each other. Mm-hmm. And I would say probably me more than him, right? I had to understand his field, where he was coming from. And then I had to give grace because, again, I was like very corporate background. So I'm like, yeah, okay, here's the deliverables. You do this, I do that, you know. And he's just like, okay, you know, very laxed, because he's great at what he does, but you know, the business side to him, he didn't go to school for that, you know.
Right.
And he's amazing now because he's learned all this stuff along the way. Mm-hmm. But when we were first starting up, you know, those weren't things that he was necessarily as familiar with, putting together the business plan and strategy. And so, you know, of course, like the marketing, who our target, you know, patient base was going to be. And so, I definitely had to learn to relax and, you know, let him kind of, let him take the lead from the health perspective, while still, you know, maintaining influence to me on the things that I feel that matter, which are the environment, you know, that patients come into, and the business side of things. I think what works well is that, with us now, is that even though we work together, we're managing different sides. So exactly. He's managing the day-to-day. And, you know, and the patient stuff, I'm like, I don't know about that. You know, people sometimes ask me, I'm like, I don't know. And I'm, you know, more so managing, for example, when we opened our second office, I did everything up until he was ready to open for business. And then when he was ready for open business, I'm like, okay, here's the keys. Yeah. And, you know, I'm doing my part. But, yeah, you know, from working with the contractor, and, you know, getting the site built, making sure that we had everything that we needed from a supply perspective and equipment perspective, all of those components, then managing marketing to get the word out, about, you know, the location. So, that's a lot of what I do. So it's definitely heavier for me on the forefront when we are first starting up. And then once, we're actually live, that's when, you know, it's his show and he kind of just shows up and does his thing. And so, you know, I support our staff, you know, and the things that they need on a day-to-day side, but I feel that we've got two like very distinct roles that complement each other. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so we're able to work well together because of that. We're both good at two things.
Yeah.
But two separate things, right? We're both really good at two separate things. So, so that helps a lot.
It's kind of like a puzzle. So I'm thinking back to when Dr. Anderson was talking about like your role and how you all work together. Mm-hmm. And that I think that is the beauty of being able to have a spouse that you really enjoy and that you really work well with. Like, he spoke so highly of you and how much of a huge piece that you played and, you know, and continue to play in a cornerstone chiropractic. And it kind of leads me, I'm sorry, I'm asking a lot of questions, Cedric. It's leading me to my next question. I'm going to give it back to you. But marriage is a goal for many, many people. And so you even said that along with wanting to have a super successful career, family and marriage was one of those big goals for you. So what advice can you give to someone when they're ready or when they're trying to decide if someone is the one? Like, how do you know if you found your person?
So, so it's interesting because for me, I felt like, you know, he was my person after like our first phone call. And it was just because, you know, I could really be myself, like fully myself. And I felt like he got me and I was like, oh, okay. You know, just in determining, you know, one of the big things for me, of course, was constantly prayer. And, you know, praying for, you know, this person. And so when I started to see that he was all the things that I had prayed for, I definitely knew like, okay, you know, that this person, you know, is definitely the one for me. What I will say to the women out there, I know is just, you know, be intentional and stay away from time wasters. Like, that is all I will say, because I think that's a huge problem in our community, you know. And I talked to so many women who have, you know, they've stayed with someone for so long thinking that it was going to be more than it is. And, you know, you both have to mutually have the same goals. You both have to, you know, want a relationship, want a marriage, want children. You have to just be on the same page with some very basic and fundamental things and know that you're growing towards that. And you should be able, you know, to have those, you know, those authentic conversations, those grown-up conversations, to know whether or not you guys, you know, have the same intentions for someone. You can't change anybody. So, you know, it's like, hey, either you want the same things or you don't. And if you don't want the same things, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, be friends and move on, you know, and continue to be intentional. Never, ever give up hope. Never give up hope. So.
I love it.
Yeah. And you just dropped a lot of gems. I'm sure, so like you said, a lot of the ladies out there love
and men
some
too.
Of that information. Yeah, for sure. And like Dr. Anderson described you as the brain of the operations. So there we go. More of that brain power working right there. But like we talked about, you hold a lot of different roles. You're a mother, business owner, have a blog and an influencer.
Yes.
How do you make time for yourself? What does free time for Amber look like?
Laying in the bed and sleeping is like always like my dream. Like, and so what I found though, is that even if I'm at home, like, and you know, my kids are here, like I'm still thinking about them and I may not be able to rest, you know, as well. And so, you know, Demetrius, my husband, has been very good at supporting me and knowing, like, because I'm an introvert, like I'm a major introvert, and so I am recharged by that alone time. And when you are a mom, like, you don't get to go to the bathroom alone.
Yeah.
So you know, so he and I we had agreed that, you know, for me, one of the helpful things is I usually have like a night away, like once a month, where I'll go just to a hotel, like right down the street. And I will lay down in that bed all by myself and I'll sleep. And so that is a huge, you know, blessing for me. And I do encourage other moms to do it. If you don't financially have the means to go to a hotel, if you have a friend maybe that's single that has a spare bedroom, ask them if you can maybe crash there and just rest. So rest for me, you know, is sort of my self-care. I think spas are great and fabulous, and I do love the spa. I do love a great massage. But you know, anybody that's a mama knows, if you go to the spa and get all relaxed, and then you come home and everybody needs you and they're screaming. It's like, oh, you're all of a sudden, you know, you're back in mom mode. And so, so being able to kind of have just like 24 hours to really rest is what helps me. Like that to me is probably, I think, the most important part of my self-care that helps me to be a better mother and a better wife.
Such a great answer. Thank you. And so I think we should probably transition into our little final segment. We've taken up a lot of your time today, but we really do appreciate all of it. So this final segment, honestly, is just for us to ask some more like just lower level questions, kind of do some fun things to learn more about Amber and for our listeners to be able to learn more about you. So yeah, I'll let Cedric kind of kick us off.
So this one, you may have just answered it, but we'll see. If you had 25 hours in the day and everyone else still had 24, what would you do with the extra hour?
I would sleep, yes. Sleep.
There we go. All right, I thought so.
I would sleep, yes.
Okay, so thinking about music, what's one song that you listened to growing up that maybe you still play to this day, still like one of your favorite songs, but that you can also share with your kids?
Okay, so I'm a big Michael Jackson fan.
Okay.
And my boys now are big Michael Jackson fans. And so that's it's so cute. Funny because like there is several, there's some that I'm like, oh, I like this one, but they want that one. So we listen to Michael Jackson, Thriller, Dirty Diana. Now that the 2-year-old is getting into Dirty Diana, it's funny. He sings it in the car. I'm like, did you hear him sing it? But yeah. So Dirty Diana, Beat It, Smooth Criminal. So those are some of our faves.
Timeless. And that's how you know someone is an amazing artist, like yes. 50, 60 years apart. So yes. Very cool.
When you post the video of your son singing.
We did see that.
So many people sent it to me and were just laughing. They're like, this is hilarious. So they were jamming out for sure.
They were feeling it, weren't they? They were like, yes.
And so also we've been trying to compile a book list from a lot of our guests. We'll ask them what books have been impactful on their journey or what books they really recommend or enjoy. Do you have anything for our listeners of any recommendations for books that really impacted your journey?
Okay, yes. So let me think first, because I mean, I used to be like a big reader. So I'm trying to think about books that impacted my journey. I'd like to give you guys a couple if I can, but I may not be able to. So my mind may not. So the first thing, because we did talk about dating. Mm-hmm. So I am going to highly recommend Finding a Date Worth Keeping by Dr. Henry Cloud.
Okay.
He is a Christian psychologist. And that book changed my perspective on dating and the way I dated and the way a lot of us are taught, you know, growing up. And so, so that is a big one that I would recommend. Sorry, I'm just looking here at my library.
You're totally fine.
See if I can remember anything else that helped me from a corporate perspective. So, and I can't, I would say the Bible, read your Bible.
Yes.
There we go. It has all the answers that you need.
It does. And if you are, you know, again, if you're a corporate America and you're struggling, I would always go to what book was that? I would always just go to The Story of Joseph. Like, you know, because I mean, ultimately, like he was a businessman. And so I would kind of get philosophies around that. And you know, then that would really help me and encourage me. So, yeah.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah. And if you think of any other books too, you can send them to us later and we can add them to our, you know, long, super long list that we're building up.
I'm sure like my husband probably gave you like 5, like he is constantly reading now and he does audio books. Yeah. He's got some great ones, but yes, I will think about that.
Okay. Awesome. If there was one mommy duty that you could never do again, that you could take off your mommy duty list, what would that be?
Wiping butts.
Simple and plain.
That's a pretty easy one.
Yes.
Yeah, I've never had to change a diaper before.
I don't think I have either, and that's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Just wait. It's coming.
I'll be waiting for a minute.
Yeah.
In hindsight, there are always things that you wish you knew, or things that you know only experience teaches you. But think about fresh out of college Amber, what is something you would tell her and why?
20-year-old Amber.
Yes, I would say to just enjoy life a bit more. You know, and that was the thing, is that I was so focused on this person that I thought I needed to be, that, you know, I didn't have a lot of fun, you know? So I would just say, and that, like, for me even went, like, from when I was in college, I did have fun, but I took myself a little too seriously. So, just don't take yourself too seriously, and don't put too much pressure on yourself in terms of, you know, some like big life thing. So I'm just going to say this is, you know, a lot of us like, we're like, okay, what's my purpose in life? And you like really harp on that. And that's like a, you know, big thing that you're thinking about. And it's true. Like, we all have purpose, but you may not know what that, you know, big, you know, what that big, like, heavy purpose is, like, right away. But there's purpose in everything that you do.
Yes.
And in daily things and the encounters that you have, if you just kind of, you know, follow the spirit and just follow, you know, there are people that you can help. So, you know, don't put so much pressure on yourself if you don't know that while you're young. But just take pride in everything that you do, right? And all of those things will culminate and lead up to that long term.
I love it.
Perfect.
So this one is actually not even a segment question, but so Amber, at this chapter, like in your life and what you're doing, you know, you're with your family, you're helping your husband, you guys are, you know, building up this, this amazing brand. Mm-hmm. What do you see or what do you want for yourself in the like coming chapters of your life? So after your boys are a little older, do you have some things that you're like, okay, I know I want to do that next?
Yeah, I would love to, you know, for me, like, because I do love entertaining and decorating, I would love to, you know, kind of grow in that space mm-hmm. from a digital perspective, but be like, what I would really like is to maybe be with, you know, have a few like key strategic partnerships, with some brands where I can work with them consistently, like every month. And, you know, I'll just say, I'll put it out there. Like, I want to work with Hobby Lobby or Michaels and come up with, you know, craft ideas for them every month and then have something, you know, to share, you know, with followers, not just mine, but content that they can use and, you know, share out with their customers. So that's long-term what I would, you know, what I would see is I want to be a content creator for a brand, you know, while still kind of having, you know, having an unbiased approach, right? Where I don't work for that brand. I don't want to work for them, but I want to create content for them.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool. And all things that I know are going to happen for you. So very, very cool.
At Michael's, at Hobby Lobby.
Yes.
Coming for you.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And so we just have two more questions to close us out. Mm-hmm. The first being, where can people find out more about you if they want to get connected or read the blog or just learn anything to do with Amber, Authentically Amber, so on and so forth? Go ahead, drop all your handles, websites. How can people reach you?
Yes. So first, you can find me on my blog, AuthenticallyAmber.com. Is that easy? Just AuthenticallyAmber.com. And from there, you can connect to all of my social media handles. On Instagram, I am AuthenticallyAmberBlog. So you can find me there as well. And, you know, just click through for Facebook, everything like that. Feel free to DM me. You can message me. You can email me if you visit my blog page, if you have more questions. And I would love to answer them and inspire you.
Perfect. And then just to close it out, if you could have a billboard that display any message to anyone in the world, what would that message say? What would you say to people on this billboard?
Oh gosh. If I had a billboard and I could say anything.
Yes, say anything and everyone would see it. Your reach is unlimited. What would you say on this billboard?
Oh, you know, of course I would love to be selfish, but I can't. You know, I'd let it be like, follow me.
Right.
But no, I mean, I really, you know, just have to point to, you know, my creator and my maker, and that's what's most important. And, you know, as I tell my boys, like, every day, you know, you are loved, you know, God loves you. You know, when they were babies, and I even say it now, you know, Jesus loves you and I love you. And that is, to me, what is most important is just knowing that you are loved. You are loved by Christ. And, you know, everything starts with love. So I'd have to point it to my creator, although it'd be nice to get all those followers.
Jesus wins, love wins.
Yes, we all win. We all win.
But Amber, it's been great having you on. It's been a pleasure. I'm sure all of our listeners and followers have learned a lot from this conversation. I know I can speak for myself. I know I have. I'm sure Tia has as well.
Definitely. So
definitely appreciate you for coming on. And that's another episode of the Invited Podcast in the books. We'll talk to y'all next week.
That's a wrap.
Thank you so much.